This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Nabil Biagio, and here's what's coming up.
And this drought is actually worse than the drought of 2011, where we had 250,000 people lost their life.
That's UNICEF's Somalia representative, Wafa Said, on the dire situation in Somalia from a severe drought. Also, the measles are on the rise in Zimbabwe, and a roadside bomb in northern Burkina Faso has killed at least 35 people. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Angola is tense today after its constitutional court rejected an application from the runner-up in last month's election to nullify the final vote count. The National Union for the Total Liberation of Angola, UNITA, had presented evidence it said proved it beat the ruling Popular Movement for the Liberation of Angola, the MPLA, which has governed the country for almost 50 years. The court's decision can be appealed. So the MPLA's 51% win is final, and João Lourenço is expected to be sworn in for a second term as president. Darren Taylor has more.
And this drought is actually worse than the drought of 2011, where we had 250,000 people lost their life.
No one should rob us the victory. The words of UNITA leader Adalberto Costa Jr. to reporters after the announcement of the court's decision. He maintains UNITA's polling station records show it beat the MPLA by 1.5%.
You know, in Angola, things aren't always what they seem. There's a veneer of democracy, like there's a veneer of development post-war.
Angola expert Paula Cristina Roque says UNITA's cried foul after five previous elections.
They always said there were irregularities, the elections were opaque. They always said that this was not a fair and transparent and free process. But never did they say they won. This is the first time they said they won, because they didn't actually have proof in the previous ones that they did win. Now they do.
Speaking during a briefing to South African journalists organized by Radio 702, she said Angolans had expected the court to dismiss UNITA's evidence that the election had been stolen.
The Chief Justice of the Constitutional Court was previously the member of the MPLA's political bureau.
The MPLA says the court's decision is the correct one, but Roque says she's very concerned about the next few days.
The whole capital is heavily militarized with the troops on full combat readiness, which is very worrying. The police force, which is around 150,000, are fully deployed with armored vehicles around the country as well, especially the rapid deployment police, the anti-terror police, because they're expecting protests.
According to economists, 65% of young Angolans are unemployed. Roque says these are the people who voted for UNITA's Adalberto, and they're angry.
Adalberto has a very difficult dilemma. If he takes his seat in parliament in a few days, when the new government will be inaugurated, he will probably lose a big chunk of the support of the youth, because they want him to stick to the electoral truth. They don't want him to play the game where the parliamentarians take their seats, they get a good salary, a nice car, and life goes on, when the people that voted for them voted for change.
Roque says Adalberto, at this stage, has nowhere to turn for electoral justice. Both the African Union and the Southern African Development Community have recognized Lourenço's win as legitimate and congratulated him. Yet, says Roque, the AU and SADC only had election observers in the capital, Luanda, which the MPLA concedes was won by Adalberto.
He could take to the international community, but we know that the international community is economic interests trump democracy. And right now, because of the war in Ukraine, oil and gas is a very important commodity for Europe and the US, and Angola has a lot of it. He might want to put a lot of pressure on the streets, but if he takes people on the streets peacefully, the likelihood is they will be met with a lot of force and there will be bloodshed.
Analysts don't expect Angola to be making any democratic gains anytime soon. They describe the country as a kleptocratic securitized state where the MPLA will do all it can to keep its hold on diamond and oil wealth. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The Constitutional Court of Angola has rejected a request by the opposition party, the National Union for the Total Independence of Angola, UNITA, to annul the August 24 presidential election result, which declared the ruling People's Movement of the Liberation of Angola MPLA winner. But Luanda-based Angolan journalist Israel Campos tells me UNITA has a second petition to have the votes recounted that the Constitutional Court has yet to rule on.
We know that UNITA has appealed to the Constitutional Court to contest the Angola electoral results that give a win to the ruling MPLA. So one of the complaints has been rejected yesterday by the Constitutional Court, the one that they were asking for a annulment of the results from the National Electoral Commission. So that one has been rejected yesterday. And the document was signed by all the all the members, almost everyone being part of the constitutional court. So UNITA yesterday have given a press conference where President Adalberto Costa Jr. has again said that there is no trust in the results from the National Electoral Commission and that they will do everything in their power to make sure that the electoral truth remains.
You mentioned that one petition has been thrown out. It means the verdict is still not final. What is going to happen next regarding the other petition?
Well, it's still unclear on when the Constitutional Court is going to rule on the other petition from the from UNITA. We know that the National Electoral Commission has said yesterday has advised the Constitutional Court to reject UNITA's complaints because they have said that they don't have any legal base on their complaints, because we need to understand that before UNITA went to the Constitutional Court, they did complain with the National Electoral Commission, which has rejected their complaints.
And just to refresh our memory, what is the second petition about which the court has yet to rule on?
Well, UNITA is saying that, you know, they do not agree with the final results from the National Electoral Commission. They say that the accord, according to the reports they have, which we call atacinses, which are like the reports that come from the polling stations, they have not, the reports they have do not match with the ones that the National Electoral Commission has announced. So that's what they're asking in that petition for the Constitutional Court to reveal the counting of the votes or allow there to be a independent structure to do the recounting of the votes. So that's what UNITA is looking for, because they say they have data, they have figures saying that the results from the National Electoral Commission are not the true ones.
Understood. So they're claiming discrepancies between their own tallying of the results and the tally they received from the Electoral Commission. So how are people receiving this outside the two parties? What is the mood in the street, in the streets of Angola, if you wish?
Well, it's important to say that there's still tension here in Angola. Earlier this week, yesterday, we learned that the army has been, you know, put in high risk alert, and walking around Rwanda, you can see that many armed police and army staff are around the streets. So there's this environment of where people are still really tense, just waiting for the final outcome from the election. It's been almost 3 weeks. We're going to the third week after the 24th of August, where we held our elections. So people are still tense because they want to know what's the final outcome so that they can go and get along with their lives.
That was Angolan journalist Israel Campos speaking with me from the Angolan capital, Luanda, this past hour. A roadside bomb in northern Burkina Faso has killed at least 35 people and left dozens injured. The Associated Press reports the governor of the region says a supply convoy under army escort was hit on the road between the towns of Bourzanga and Djibo. He said the wounded included civilians in one of the vehicles. The AP cites an internal security report saying it's the fifth explosion in Somme province since August. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack, though officials suspect Islamic extremists linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. In January, the military ousted a democratically elected government, claiming it could better protect the country. The AP notes the bombing comes one day after interim president, Lieutenant Colonel Paul Henry Sandaogo Damiba, or rather Damiba, said the military government's efforts against the militants has begun to bear fruit. Kenya's president-elect William Ruto is facing a tough challenge to deliver on his campaign pledges of creating jobs, employing more people in the public sector, and setting up funds for various initiatives. That's according to the political analyst and professor of law at the Nairobi-based Daystar University, Martin Olo, who says there are lessons to learn from the way last month's election was conducted, disputed, and settled.
Generally, the 2022 electoral processes leading to the campaigns and finally culminating into the election day of six different positions, the presidency, the governorship, the senatorial, the women rep, the member of the National Assembly and the member of county assemblies, ran generally well. The players were able to campaign peacefully. Voting day was peaceful, albeit with some challenges. But generally, 70 out of 100 in terms of performance, both in terms of what the Independent Electoral and Boundary Commission was able to do, in terms of what political parties were able to do, and in terms of what political players were able to do to sell their agenda and to rally their supporters.
You did mention the process was peaceful and free to a significant extent. What example has the Kenyan election set for the troubled region of East Africa? I'm talking about Uganda, South Sudan, Somalia, and others. And you do work. You do a lot of work on South Sudan, for example. The country has not held any elections since its independence. Ugandan elections are always characterized by violence and intimidation. What example is Kenya setting?
I think when you asked that, I was laughing because I don't think Sudan, South Sudan has held any elections worth talking about. Uganda does not hold elections. That's a one-man show, and what happens in Uganda has nothing to do with democracy. The only comparison we can make in East Africa is really between Kenya and Tanzania. Now, when you compare Kenya and Tanzania, I think that the level of maturity, the level of political competition is civil in Tanzania, is less civil in Kenya, and the outcomes in Tanzania tend to be more acceptable than the outcomes in Kenya because we seem to go to dispute elections every time because the processes and the numbers do not always seem to add up, especially in presidential elections. Not in 2007, not in 2013, not in 2017, and not in 2022. So I don't want to say that Kenya has a very good example on presidential elections around the region. Perhaps compared to Tanzania, Tanzania has done it better, has seen less controversy, and perhaps has seen better legitimacy. Because legitimacy and legality are the issues here. The Kenyan elections tend to be legally correct, but legitimacy is always wanting.
And what do you expect from the incoming Ruto administration? What is he going to do different? And will he have the will and the support necessary to pursue his campaign pledges?
I want to give Ruto credit for being a very hard-working person, for being very committed and convicted to the things he believes in. He's a politician par excellence. If you look at him from the way he thinks, the way he plans, the way he organizes, no doubt about it. But Ruto has also been part of the 2013 to 2017 and now the 2022 government. So if there is anything that has not gone well, he knows it and has been part of it now. How different will it be with him in charge? That is the dollar, the $1 million question. That what is this that he will do that he never was able to do when he was the deputy president, and now when he is the president? I think that the jury is out there. He will have to match his eloquence, his oratory, and his great promise with action.
That was political analyst and professor of law Martin Olo speaking with me earlier today.
We know that UNITA has appealed to the Constitutional Court to contest the Angola electoral reform.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. Chad is battling what aid workers are calling catastrophic rains and floods. Reuters says thousands of people have left their inundated homes in the capital in N'Djamena in search of shelter. The wire service says among the hardest hit areas is the 8th district of the capital, where families use wooden boats to cross the street. Others have taken refuge in a local school or use sticks and cloth to create makeshift dwellings amid circulating mosquitoes. Many lack food and some are ill with malaria. The city's mayor says an emergency crisis committee has been set up to provide food, blankets and health kits. A senior official with the state weather agency told Reuters that it is the most rainwater to hit the country since 1990. The United Nations is calling for a significant and rapid scale-up of humanitarian assistance to prevent a famine in Somalia that could result in a devastating loss of life. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva. Please, sorry, we're experiencing technical difficulties here in the studio. Zimbabwe is struggling to contain a measles outbreak that has killed nearly 700 people, most of them children and youth whose parents are in religious sects that do not trust vaccines. Health groups in Zimbabwe are calling for compulsory vaccinations to halt the spread of the virus. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwean children receive their vaccinations for measles at a clinic in the capital, Harare. Zimbabwe's government said Tuesday thousands of people have been infected with measles since an April outbreak and 698 people have died, most of them children. The death toll announced over the weekend is four times the August figure. Zimbabwe's health ministry blames some religious sects for the outbreak. It says some religious groups and traditional leaders preach against getting vaccinations. Health authorities have since been struggling to contain the infectious viral disease, which causes a rash, cough, and high fever and can be fatal for unvaccinated children. Alex Kasasira is the World Health Organization's representative in Zimbabwe.
Measles disease is a very contagious infectious disease that spreads when the number of unvaccinated children rises beyond a critical threshold. So what we have in Zimbabwe right now is because the number of unvaccinated children has risen because of several factors, communities who are not comfortable to have their children vaccinated, disruptions in vaccination services because of the recent COVID-19 pandemic.
The rising death toll is fueling calls in Zimbabwe for mandatory shots to hold this virus. The Zimbabwe Health Law and Policy Consortium's Tinashe Mundawarara agrees.
A compulsory immunization program has to be well planned, and it has to cover every child in this country, and that will ensure that the best interest of the child is really considered.
Zimbabwe's health authorities have not yet made the measles vaccination mandatory and were not immediately available for comment. But they have been campaigning for all children between 6 and 15 years to be immunized and are working with medical aid groups like the UN's Children's Fund, UNICEF, to educate those who resist. UNICEF Zimbabwe's Dr. Tajuddin Yowale says they are working with the government to contain the outbreak.
Just like the COVID response, the government of Zimbabwe and partners are taking seriously the current outbreak of measles that we have in the country. At present, the government has deployed rapid response team supported by UNICEF, WHO and other partners to help better track the incidence of measles. But more importantly, UNICEF and our community actors are also working hand in hand to increase awareness of the measles vaccine and also help address community resistance to the vaccination.
The measles outbreak was first reported in Zimbabwe's Manicaland province, which borders Mozambique, and have since spread nationwide. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
The United Nations is calling for a significant and rapid scale-up of humanitarian assistance to prevent a famine in Somalia that could result in a devastating loss of life. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The latest UN Food and Nutritional Analysis released Monday warns more than a million people in the Bay region in south-central Somalia are on the verge of famine. That is the third drought facing Somalia in a decade. UNICEF Somalia representative Wafa Saeed says repercussions from the current drought will be disastrous if international support is not significant and immediate.
And this drought is actually worse than the drought of 2011, where we had 250,000 people lost their life, half of them children. It is worse because it is more in severity, it has lasted longer, and it's impacting larger areas. I've actually spoken to people who are over 70 years of age who told me that they have never seen such a bad drought in their lifetime.
The UN Children's Fund says malnutrition has reached crisis levels. It says 1.5 million children, nearly half of the under five population, are acutely malnourished. It warns some 385,000 children suffering from severe acute malnutrition are at risk of death without special nutritional treatment. Speaking in the Somali capital, Mogadishu, Saeed says some 730 children are reported to have died in food and nutrition centers across the country. She adds the number is probably higher because many deaths go unreported. She says the worsening malnutrition crisis, coupled with a worsening water and sanitation crisis, makes children particularly vulnerable to deadly outbreaks of disease.
We are really very much concerned about this because we are also seeing increase in outbreak of acute water diarrhea. There are more than 8,400 cases this year and around 13,000 cases of measles. And the cases of measles this year alone is more than what has been reported in 2020 and 2021 combined.
Another matter of concern is the large number of children likely to miss an education. UNICEF says more than 3 million children are directly affected by drought, and 900,000, half of them girls, are at risk of dropping out of school. It notes 90% of those who drop out never return to school. The UN Children's Agency says only 65% of its $112 million appeal is funded, and less than a third of the United Nations' overall appeal for $1 billion has been received. The agency says donors must step up and respond generously to this overarching emergency to stop the worst from happening. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps